afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week from his office in Frankfurt is Mayor Chris McBarnes. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Stan. Thank you so much for taking time to have me on the show today, and greetings from Frankfurt.
Pleased to have you. If you've got a question for Mayor McBarnes during our next half hour, give us a call at 496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can always tweet your question to @WBAAnews on Twitter. I'll see it pop up on my screen here, and we'll get it right to the mayor. Well, you and I spoke a couple weeks ago when the city pool was closed about some of the overhaul that was needed to make that facility safer. I wanted to check up with you and see what the latest was on those efforts.
Sure. Well, Stan, great question. We had an absolute tragedy in our community that rocked a community of our size, would rock any community, but especially amongst a small community of 16,400. We're all neighbors, and we all know each other here. And we had a young man who lost his life at our pool. And that has been absolutely tragic. And moving forward, we can't change what happened that day. But as a leader in this community, I have tasked our Parks Department, who directly oversees the operations of the TPA swimming pool, to look at implementation of best practice safety protocols, enhanced lifeguard training protocols, as well as improved pool operation and maintenance protocols, and to bring those back before the Board of Works so that we can ensure that nothing like this ever happens again in our community. We are still waiting for those to be brought back. Less than 24 hours after this tragedy happened, I issued by executive order from the mayor's office to immediately close down the pool to ensure that things were the best they could possibly be in terms of safety. And that's the direction that we're moving at this time.
So are you still in the sort of information gathering stage? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, Stan. We've delegated this to the Parks Department because this is their job. There are certain things that I would like to see implemented, including a new rotation protocol for our lifeguards, no less than 3 lifeguards at any given point in time in our pool, new chlorine protocol. I would like for our pool to strive to obtain no less than 1.5 parts per million of chlorine or bromine at any given time in our pool to ensure clarity, as well as newly written emergency action plan protocols that deal with not only a drowning that happens by being under the water for too long, but any medical emergency that could arise. So the Parks Department is speaking with other communities that have swimming pools of this size, seeing what they have in place, scouring the state for information and data. They will compile that and bring that back to the Board of Works in a public meeting where at that time we'll decide on what gets implemented. The pool will stay closed until next year, so I didn't want them to do this in haste. I wanted them to have a thorough amount of time to bring this back to us, and that's what they're working on.
I'm assuming the retraining of employees, especially the seasonal employees like lifeguards, might have to wait until next calendar year as you're ramping up to reopen the pool. Is that a fair assumption?
Absolutely. It's very fair. And, you know, all of our lifeguards receive their certifications from the American Red Cross. So the majority of them take those classes at the Frankfurt High School. And the American Red Cross certification is very thorough. But something else I would like to see get put in place is also a skills test that's given to those lifeguards even after they receive that certification when they are looking to be hired on by the city, along with in-services done throughout the summer that make sure they're staying up on those skills, whether it be lifeboarding or a deep water rescue situation.
There were a few questions that you and I didn't get to about your most recent 200-day plan in last month's show, and I wanted to address those as well. You say that you want to review the condition of aging police and fire facilities in the city. Is it likely the city's going to have to rehab or replace several of those, do you think?
Well, from the mayor's office, Stan, I look at the direction our community is growing, and that's to the west. That's to I-65. We have the largest contiguous industrial park in the state of Indiana, and in order to continue our economic development efforts and neighborhood revitalization efforts, we have to ensure that our public safety officials not only have the equipment they need to do their jobs properly, but also the facilities. Our police right now are housed in a building that was an old U.S. Postal Service building, so obviously was not made for police work. Also, our fire stations, and we have 3 in the city, are aging. So what the Board of Works and I want to see done is a feasibility study and structural assessment study done of these facilities to look at what kind of money we need to invest into those buildings to get them where they need to be in terms of 21st century public safety standards, and then do a cost comparison of what it would look like to build a new public safety facility, perhaps combining fire, police, and potentially maybe even and emergency medical services down the road, such as ambulances. So I really wanted to challenge us to take a look at that, just to simply make sure we're preparing ourselves well for the future.
A general question that relates to that and to a number of the items in your plan. What kind of money does the city have in reserve or in its capital projects budget to be able to pay for infrastructure improvements, especially if those include building an entirely new structure from scratch?
Sure. That's a great question. That's a fair question. So when I'm thinking about infrastructure improvements, I look at the different budgets that I have to work with. City General, we strive to keep no less, and we're going through the budget process right now, no less than a 9% cash reserve at any given point in time. In our City General budget, we work off of approximately a $9.3 million budget. So a 9% cash reserve would be roughly $915,000. We want to protect that money because that's the money, if we were to have an emergency in our community, we can keep our employees working. We can keep those health insurance standards there for our employees. So I look outside of City General for major capital improvements. So I have funds like EDIT, which is the Economic Development Income Tax Fund, as well as the Cumulative Capital Development Fund. Those funds can have anywhere between $250,000 and $1.8 million within them. But I also have to keep in mind that there are other major projects in the community that need to be completed, like our roadway projects or the restoration of City Hall, perhaps. We're in a historic building here in Old Stoney. So what I do on a yearly basis is I look at those fund reports, I look at the appropriations the City Council has given me, and then I work with them, and I pull from their wisdom and their counsel. Of course, we have 7 City Councilmen here in the city to prepare long-term for those budget items. But it's important that we protect that 9% cash reserve in City General for emergency situations and to ensure that we can put employees out on the street to get these services that our constituents need to them.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd welcome your phone calls at 496-1999. Tweet those questions also to @WBAANews on Twitter. While we're talking about the police, we spoke last month about the new pin mapping system that you're implementing to try to track crime trends in the city. I wonder if in that time, has the city identified any trends that it's keeping an eye on already, either areas where crime is more prolific or specific types of crime that you now know need more attention than you previously realized?
Absolutely. Great question, Stan. So going along with that, we also have a theft prevention campaign in our community. And the numbers that we're looking at, Stan, show that the majority of the crime that happens in the city of Frankfort is theft-related, especially in the northwestern and southwestern portions of our city. And we're getting that empirical data from utilizing the Spillman pin mapping initiative that's within our 200-day plan. And so what our chief of police is doing now is he's going around to different neighborhoods and communicating with these individuals what is happening in things that they can do to thwart this crime. Actually, tonight at 5:30, our chief of police and deputy chief of police will be at 3rd Street Park. That's within the southwestern portion of our city to talk to those residents. It starts at 5:30. We want to invite individuals out to that. They will receive crime statistics in that area based off that Spillman pin mapping initiative, and then we'll be able to put measures into place to thwart that. But actually, the majority of theft that happens in our community, if individuals would put highly visible items such as cell phones or laptops in the trunk of their car, make sure that they're hidden within their car, make sure they're getting those car doors locked every night, or they park under a well-lit street light, we could thwart that. So that's really where that communication cornerstone comes in our 200-day plan. And tonight, in our police community meeting, we keep that initiative going.
When you have meetings like this, it seems to me that there are two groups of people that you could be talking to. You could be talking to the people who are trying to stop themselves from being victims of theft and other crimes. But then there, of course, are the people who are committing those crimes. And it doesn't strike me that those are the people who are going to come to this meeting. I think you're going to attract the interested citizens and not necessarily the criminals. And so how do you address the other half of that?
Sure. Well, we address the other half of that by putting more officers on the street. Coming into office, we put a take-home car initiative in place simply to help our police be even that much more visible. My first year in office, we worked with the City Council, and we added on an additional 3 police officers. You said it best, Stan. Criminals they don't want to be around public safety officials. Seeing those individuals in cars and in uniform makes them very uncomfortable. Being in an area that's very aesthetically pleasing, that looks pleasant to the eye, makes them feel uncomfortable. So we want to have that additional presence in our neighborhoods. We want our police officers to be visible at all times. And that's one key area that I believe can truly continue to drive criminals out of our community. Now, the individuals that want to help the cause, that come to these meetings, that's so very important. We're trying to communicate to our citizens the best thing they can do is be our eyes and ears out there. And there's no too small of a reason to let our police know that something's happening. If someone is walking up and down your street and looks suspicious, if lights are going on and off in a house and there's a lot of traffic there, let us know that, because that can allow us to hone our efforts even more efficiently to thwart crime in that area of the community.
And one of the things that's also in your plan is you say you're going to target specific neighborhoods that are in need of attention and give them increased city support and access to services and perhaps even police protection for a short time each. Your plan says a day, maybe a week at a time. Is that correct?
Absolutely, because this not only goes along with police work, but other city services that we offer. And I'll focus on our building inspectors department program, for example. We have a Neighbors Helping Neighbors program, and this is where we connect volunteers in our community to individuals that need that additional volunteer help in order to spruce up their property and become a little more prideful when it comes to their property. So if we find an area in the community that's having more crime or is having more complaints when it comes to property maintenance violations, we're going to get our building inspectors in that area of the community to go door to door to make that Neighbors Helping Neighbors program accessible, as well as add that additional layer of code enforcement to hopefully spruce up that area, add a more aesthetically pleasing feel to it. And again, we believe that directly goes back to crime through prevention of good environmental design.
Have you already come up with a list of the areas within the city, specific neighborhoods, specific blocks maybe, that you want to target, and given some sense of how long you'd like to spend in each place?
Sure. So we continue to evaluate that very question, but again, I'll harken back to a previous answer. Really, the northwest sector of our city, along with the southwest sector of our city, is where we see the biggest amounts of crime happening, and perhaps certain residences that may need cleaned up, that may need those additional city services really honed in on those areas. And that's going to be a continual process over the next 200 days, and it's not going to stop there. So we're going to continue to look at those areas of our city, get our police department and our building inspectors department within those areas, much like tonight, 5:30 at 3rd Street Park, to keep the initiative moving forward in a positive manner.
Is there a possibility that once the city gets through paying attention to an area and one of these blitzes, as you're calling them, that the problems that you're trying to address in those areas, while they may go down when there's, as you say, the additional uncomfortability of having extra police or extra attention in an area, once that dies down, is it possible that these things could crop back up because they think, Big Brother's no longer watching, I can go back to doing whatever nefarious thing I was doing before?
Sure, and that's a fair question. And yes, there's obviously the vulnerability of that happening, but I hope what happens, Stan, through these efforts is this. Our citizens, and I believe in our citizens, they're smart people, become that much more educated on what to look for. And not only that, but the city services that could be applicable to them. So then they can use that information after this quote-unquote blitz gets done with to continue to make those calls to our police department at the correct time in the future, to utilize the Neighbors Helping Neighbors program and the different initiatives that our building inspector Sam Payne can provide to those areas to make sure that they take that accountability for their residents and their block and their neighborhood to help that process move forward. Government must work hand in hand with the people of the neighborhoods to make sure that these initiatives come out successful. And I believe through the education component of these blitzes, that will occur.
We've got about 12 more minutes with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We hope we can get your phone calls in during that time. Call us at 496-1999. Also, tweet your questions to @WBAANews on Twitter. They'll show up right here on my computer, and I'll get them into the mayor immediately. You're also planning a meeting for Frankfort's Hispanic community in the coming days, according to your plan. I wondered, your plan says there's a single meeting that's planned, and I wondered if you should instead plan a regular conversation time to address the needs of Latino residents, because there is a substantial Latino community in Frankfort.
We do. Stan, you know, my projections is close to 35% of our population is of Latino origin. And we've had several conversations with the Latino community from previous plans. Our police department does regularly meet with our Latino community. So does our building inspectors department. I have a Latino advisory board that I meet with on a regular basis as well. So this is an ongoing initiative. And you're absolutely right. It's important that we communicate and attempt to break down those cultural barriers so that we have an expectation from both sides of what the community expects when those individuals migrate here, as well as what community services are there for them as citizens of our community to utilize. So this is something we're excited about to keep that conversation going.
Now, let me ask about the other side of that coin, relating back to the meetings with the Hispanic community and the extra attention on some problem areas. How do you avoid the perception that the city would be targeting certain groups, either low-income residents or minorities, or how do you avoid people feeling like they're being picked on, for lack of a better term?
Sure. Well, Stan, it's kind of cumbersome upon myself to think about the fact that I really don't get a lot of calls to my office from the Latino community. And I wish it was the opposite. If those individuals live here, they need to understand what services can be provided to them. And then in turn, when we provide that educational component, it will make the city better as a whole. So I'm simply looking at this from a strategic standpoint and saying, as a communicator, sometimes you have to amend your message to different demographics within your community to effectively relay standards and expectations on each side. So it's not that we're trying to single anyone out. We are trying to do a better job as leaders of amending our communication style to meet the needs of that specific demographic, to hopefully break down any cultural barriers that are there so that we can learn from one another and make a better community for all.
So it sounds like there's two ways you could come at this. You could come at this from you getting contacted by people in the community who say, we need help, or you could go to them, as your plan seems to do, and say, the city believes that we could communicate with you better. How do you get past the initial communication problem, which is someone's going to look at this skeptically and go, he thinks we have a problem and he thinks he can solve it. What is the way that you get past that barrier that you're talking about?
Sure. Well, I think it's important that we work with the gatekeepers of the Latino community. You know, in this instance, I work very closely with our extension office that's actually ran by Purdue University. They do a wonderful job with the Latino community, reaching out to them, teaching English as a new language to those individuals, working with them on business service standards for those individuals that want to open up a new business. So I really rely on them to let me know what medium is appropriate for those individuals to learn within, and then we really drive off of that. So working with people that are ingrained in the Latino community to understand what they need to know and where that best possible location may be. Maybe it's at our neighborhood center. Maybe it's after a Catholic Mass on a Sunday. That's where I want to have my department heads at, so that those individuals can truly understand the services that we have to provide and how they can become a true part of this community, because we need them here.
Just got a phone call from a gentleman who wanted to know what can be done to eliminate the problem of break-ins without having to just buy bigger locks for your cars or your doors. What else is the city doing?
Sure, absolutely. So we have a public safety program that's actually called the Safer Seniors Program. And what I would encourage this individual to do is he can call our fire department, and free of charge, they will schedule a time where a firefighter and a police officer will come over to their home, and they will specifically talk to them one-on-one about their property, about things that they could do better to perhaps make themselves more safe, as well as educate them on the specific crime that's happening in the area that they live in. Again, this is an additional city service that we like to provide, that the taxpayers are paying for already, and you can get that one-on-one individual information. So I'd encourage that individual to reach out, we'll have professionals visit that individual, and give that one-on-one attention that's definitely needed.
Both those local area blitzes and the meetings with minority groups in the community highlight something that came to light within the last week or two. Your deputy police chief, Glenn Talbot, is actually originally from Ferguson, Missouri. And I wondered, as you've considered how to reach out to different groups, have you sought his counsel, seeing as the area of his birth is now so racially charged, for lack of a better way of putting it? Have you talked to him about how you make sure that the police, are, especially law enforcement, are seen in the proper light in a racially diverse community?
That's a great question, Stan. I have not had the opportunity to sit down with Talbot since the tragedy that happened in Ferguson to talk to him about that. But we will in the weeks to come, and we'll draw off his wisdom. The important thing, again, is that we make our police officers visible, that individuals know that we're not out to get them. We're not out to discriminate against anyone. We're there to help. And I think these community meetings that are happening tonight at 5:30, for example, in 3rd Street Park, give the individuals of our community a chance to meet our local law enforcement officials, ask them questions, learn from them, as well as giving us the opportunity to learn from those individuals that live here.
You said that you're putting more officers on the streets. Have you had any sort of initiative to try to fund more police activity, whether it's more officers or new equipment? Is that something that you're considering?
Wonderful question. So we also have a budget that's called Public Low at Safety. It's a local option income tax that almost every community throughout the state, I believe, utilizes. And it can be utilized for public safety equipment as well as salaries for public safety officials, whether it be a firefighter or a police officer. So the Board of Works and I are very aggressive, and we balance that to not only add additional police officers to our force, and that's how we worked with the City Council 3 years ago, but also give them the equipment needs that they may have. For example, in next year's budget, and we're working through the City Council with this right now, is we'd like to add a canine unit to our city police force. So this will be a drug-sniffing dog that will be able to go out and give our officers the additional support they need to seek out and disband the community of the drug problem that really all rural communities are facing now. So yes, we're becoming aggressive with that, and we're showing that through our Public Low at Safety initiative.
That would say to me, and I'm curious if you see it the same way, that what you're saying there is we need a canine unit because we have a drug problem that has risen to a level where it now needs to be dealt with in a different way than the traditional policing we've been done up till now. Is that fair?
That's fair to say. You know, we come out and we understand that drugs are a terrible problem in today's society, whether it be prescription drugs or other illicit drugs. And we're not only going above and beyond when it comes to hopefully implementing this canine program in the city, but also giving our officers additional training when it comes to drug mitigation. So when they go up on a traffic stop, they know the things to look for in order to get drugs off our streets. The focused effort that we had last year in working with state police and other local jurisdictions in getting officers out on the interstate to keep those drugs and that drug money from coming in to our city. We know that you'll never be able to fully stop this problem, but you can bet your bottom dollar in Frankfort we are going to disrupt it. And if you're going to come here and you're going to do those things, we will eventually catch you. And those initiatives are very, very close to our heart.
What kind of money is it going to take to establish that canine unit? Have you already established how much that's going to eat into the budget?
Yeah, great question. So initially, to purchase the dog and to put an officer through training on how to work with that canine unit will be $15,000. So the biggest cost is up front, and we are building that into the Public Low at Safety budget for next year. And then after that, there's an approximate $2,500 maintenance fee on a year-to-year basis, food, vet bills, et cetera, and that will be coming out of City General under the Police Department budget.
We have just a couple more minutes with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes on today's edition of Ask the Mayor. You've still got a short time that you can call us at 496-1999 and get your question in, or tweet those questions to @WBAANews on Twitter. Well, you mentioned at the beginning of the program that, or you alluded to at least, that the plan also includes annexation of the city out to I-65. So much of your plan is focused on rehabbing the core of the city. How do you balance the needs of the existing parts of Frankfort and making sure that those are solid first before you take in more land the city will then have to monitor and provide services to?
Great question, Stan. So it's a dual effort. You know, every day we're focusing on investing in the infrastructure that our citizens need that are within our municipal boundaries. But when I think about how I can do that better, how I can make more funding available to give my citizens the services they deserve, one thing comes to mind, and that's strategic and responsible growth of our community. So at the same time, I'm focusing on that. And I look at our industrial park. I look at the current successes we're having with ConAgra, a 1.6 million square foot facility, close to 200 new jobs coming here. Indiana Packers, close to 123 new jobs coming here over the next 4 years. And I'm asking myself, how can we drive off of that success? And with the reliable and low-cost utilities that our community can provide in the already magnitude of industrial growth that we have, growing to the west and getting our community to the point that we have a presence on I-65, that when millions of people drive by our exit on State Road 28 on a yearly basis, they just don't see a gas station and a soybean field, but they understand that we're here, that we're open for business, is incredibly important to me. And if we do that in the right way, that will allow for future fundamental growth of what we already have. And so that's why it's so important that we're focusing on those things, putting an Ivy Tech in the downtown to drive workforce development, to give our industry and workforce the skills they need to thrive. We're getting that done here in Frankfort. Frankfort's on the move, and we're open for business.
It strikes me that your annexation is a little different than the ones that happened in West Lafayette and in Kokomo in recent years, which were designed to bring more citizens into the city. It sounds like your annexation would primarily be to bring in more business-occupiable area rather than bringing in people who already live in the outlying parts of the county, right?
Absolutely. That's a very astute observation. Going through this process, I would like to complete our annexation process here in the city with no remonstrances. We're going out, and I want to work with agricultural landowners to sign consents that say, you know what, we believe in what you're doing, and we understand that our land may be on the edge of being developed one day. So we're working with those individuals to create an economic development opportunity. I in no way want to take in residents that may live along that corridor, if at all possible. Well, this is purely an economic development strategy to grow jobs here in our community and sustainable long-term growth.
And, of course, the way people get to your downtown primarily is off that State Road 28 exit. And let's be honest, the part of State Road 28 leading immediately into downtown Frankfort is not in great shape. And, in fact, in some places it's in really bad shape. Have you been in touch with NDOT at all about what can be done to repave or indeed start that road from scratch?
I have. I'd say the most amount of calls I get to my office, Stan, is the state of State Road 28. And I agree with you. It's embarrassing in our community. It's deplorable that we've allowed that infrastructure to get to that state, especially with the industrial growth that we have and the amount of semi-traffic we see on a daily basis. So I have constantly been in communication with NDOT. I've had our district director here. I've spoken with our state representatives on this matter. And actually, NDOT just accepted a bid yesterday for this project. So the resurfacing of that state roadway due to the advocacy from our community will commence in the next 2 months, and that will be completed per the bid the NDOT let out no later than November, I believe, 22nd of this year. So help is on its way in the coming weeks. And also, the administration has been working with CSX. They own a rail line going directly across State Road 28 West coming into the community. We are working with them to rebuild that set of railroad tracks also in the weeks to come, and we're seeing great momentum there in working contracts back and forth to get to a suitable point in time. So we understand how important that is to our community. Help is on its way, and the fix will be made here soon.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're out of time, but thanks so much. We'll do it again next month.
Okay, thanks, Stan. Have a great day.
You too. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for tuning in to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA, and have a pleasant rest of your day.